Stage Dramas presents the year's greatest detective story. This week's front page drama, the year's greatest detective story, is a dramatization of a true life story of the same name, to be found in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you each week as part of your Hearst Sunday newspaper. One of H.G. Wells' fiction characters got on a time machine and rode back into the prehistoric past. He never returned. John Wilkins, an Englishman, did much the same thing. He did not come back either. But Wilkins did it on a horse, riding into Australia's unexplored never-never land, in spite of everyone's warning. As Mr. Wilkins was rather an important Englishman, there was so much correspondence about his disappearance that the Australian government decided it would have to try to find out what became of him. There was only one person who could possibly discover that small human needle in the great desert haystack which covers so much of Australia's interior. This was a man known throughout the isolated continent as Detective Larson, who is head of Australia's famous black tracking department. He had trained a band of natives who are known as human bloodhounds. They are infinitely superior to any hound that ever lived. The dog has only its nose, which fails after the trail has cooled a few days, sometimes only a few hours. But the Aborigine, with a trance-like look in his eyes, can follow a trail months and even years old, though the sandstorms have covered much of it with fresh sand. Nobody knows how. But suppose we let Detective Larson tell us the story.
Well, the first report had it that Wilkins, who owned a station, I think you call them ranches here, on the edge of the great Australian desert, not far from Lake Terry, had merely ridden into the waste to hunt dingoes. Now, they're a wild native dog, something like coyotes, on whose head there is a government bounty.
But that was just a rumor, I suppose.
Yes. Yes, I found out from a neighbor of Wilkins that he had become fascinated by stories of the black tribes of Aborigines who wander about the heart of the desert, living on raw snakes, lizards, and sometimes each other.
Cannibals, eh?
Yes.
I didn't know any existed in Australia.
Oh, yes. Yes, these Aborigines are far more savage and uncouth than any in darkest Africa. Many of them have never seen a white man. They use stone knives, spears tipped with stone or bone, wear no clothes, and have no dwellings.
They must be more backward than was the average caveman during the early part of the Stone Age.
Yes, although they know how to make fire by friction, they rarely bother, because fuel of any sort is very scarce, and they prefer their snakes and lizards raw. In fact, alive. When they eat human flesh, that's another matter. It must first be preserved by smoking. This is an important part of the ceremonial.
We seldom hear of these Aborigines. They must be the forgotten men, dwelling at the lowest rung of the human ladder.
Yes, and they're still afraid that some stronger race will come along and kick them down still lower. That is probably the reason, when leaving one of their precious and all too scarce water holes, they poison it, knowing that the water will purify itself long before they pass that way again. Should another tribe of their own kind need that water, they will detect the poison. And anyway, it's bad manners to follow so closely. I hope you don't mind my telling you all this, as it has an important bearing on the story itself.
It's certainly very interesting. But did the Englishman Wilkins know all this when he embarked on his expedition?
I suppose Wilkins thought he knew the desert pretty well. And he had the typical Englishman's faith in his genius to get along with an inferior race. He'd made several trips into the desert. He knew his way, including all the water holes and spots to find grazing for his horse. Oh, for perhaps a couple of 100 miles.
And how did you pick up his trail after he had finally disappeared?
Well, just as detectives in big cities rely on clues and tips from what you Americans call stew pigeons, so I finally got a tip from a tame Aborigine prowling about the desert. He said he had seen indications on a certain trail that a man on horseback had been captured by nomads. I chose 3 of my best trackers and the toughest fight constable I knew, set out in a car. We traveled for a week until the last outpost was reached. Then, loading our supplies on 4 camels, we moved off. After a 3 days' trip,
it beats me what you expect to find in this practice, Wake Larson. Or even if someone did leave a sizable clue, these never-ending shifting weights of sand would bury the blasted clue in a few hours.
These weights of shifting sand, as you call them, may appear signless, trackless, and blank to you, Constable. But those Aborigines are children of an eyeless, ageless yesterday, and see things to guide them.
Well, I hope you're right. We've been on the trek for 2 days and haven't seen or heard a blinking thing except sand.
Ah, have you heard that? Bloody blinking.
Did you hear that, Constable? They found something up ahead there.
You see, you spoke too soon.
Well, where are they? Find them, boss, man. Find them good. Head boy find them plenty track, boss man.
Oh, good. Stop the camels. We'll dismount and look at the track.
Hang
on, constable. That camel is going down on its knees to let you get off. Don't fall off, or he's liable to roll over on you. These camels are treacherous to strangers.
There. He's only glad to get off that beast and set my legs. I'll ride a week on horseback, but these blasted things are the most uncomfortable things I ever sat on.
Here we are. That head boy is all excited. He's found something.
All excited? He looks like he's in a blooming trance.
Yes. Yes, they look like that when they're excited. What is it, Wallaby?
Very good find, Mr. Larson. See this place where horse stand for a long time, surrounded by many feet. Then horse and feet all go off. This way.
Very good, Wallaby. Follow up at once.
Well, sort me up a blooming apple tree. I can't see anything. Where do you see tracks?
There. Horse stand here.
If you can see tracks there, I can bloomin' well see the Albert Memorial.
Come along, constable, and don't argue. Those boys see the signs all right.
As soon as I get back to Perth, I'm going to have my eyes examined. I guess I need glasses.
Our track was following the track relentlessly for weeks. We ran out of water and twice was saved from death only because our trackers knew how to find the rare cone-shaped flowers containing watery honey that grow in the desert. Finally, we reached the waterhole.
There, at last water. Now I can drink. I'm burning up. My throat is parched beyond endurance.
Steady, constable. Steady. I know you've been through a lot, but unless you're careful, you may be bitterly poisoned.
Wait
until the boys bring up the camp.
What the devil do I have to wait for them for?
See if the water is good. If they drink, it's safe for us. If they turn away from it, you follow that example. I'm going ahead to see what my head boy Wallaby has discovered. Now, you wait here and watch those camps.
Are you boys? Hurry those blasted camels. Bring them up to the waterhouse. Hurry along. I'm dying of thirst.
Good.
What in blazes is the matter with them camels? What are they pouring and throwing their heads around for? Make up your mind, you dumb beast. Drink the water, curse you. Well, if you don't, I will.
Constable! What are you doing?
Over the love of heaven, constable.
Why, constable, you were right, Larson. As the blast is up, still it's cool, I tell you. And poison. My whole inside is on fire. It's killing me.
Lie down. Try to stay still.
I can't.
Here now. Wait until I get an antidote ready for my kit, here.
Hurry up.
Quiet now. Here, put your head up a little.
That's
it. Now, drink this. Come on, Wallop. We're going to put you on a camel and send you back. Let's hope you'll be able to survive the trip. We sent one of our trackers back to the constable and next day pressed on with our search. About noon, our remaining trackers suddenly stopped, nonplussed.
Horse stopped here. Horse gone.
Eh? A horse tracker disappeared, but that means the horse died or he's been killed.
Oh, what's the
boy say, come over there. He find horse.
Oh, good. Lead the camels. I'll run ahead, Wallaby.
Very good, Mr. Luxor.
Coming, boy. What did you find?
Eh? Well, what happened to the white man's horse?
Horse died. Tribe not eat him, boss man.
Yes, that's funny. Like mummified, almost in a perfect state of preservation. Boy, how many days since horse died?
10, maybe 12 horsemen. Funny tribe not eat horse.
Yes, very queer. They will usually eat anything. I can't understand it. Tossing up good horse
blood. I've got summons, Mr. Larson. Look around. I think we leave this trail now. Maybe find fresher ones over there. Somebody came from over there, looked at this trail, then go back.
Right you are, Wallaby. Whatever you say, but they're definitely on the right track. Those natives can't be very far ahead of us now.
Yes, sir, Mr. Larson. We make good time. Should find tribe 4, maybe 5 days.
Mummified remains of a horse, and picking up the brand new trail, we hurried as much as possible in order to gain ground on the tribe we knew must be only a few days' travel ahead. Soon the trail became so fast that even I could follow it. But soon my head boy said,
"No, go further, Mr. Larson. Now white man gone. We backtrack a little piece, see what happens. Wait, for this. We go up trail back, little piece. He go there. I go this way. Soon find out what happens.
I know. I'll set up the cameras and wait. Run along.
Over here. He say he find something, Mr. Larson. Tribe build fire.
Hey, come along. That looks bad, Wallaby.
Yes, sir, Mr. Larson. Fire is ceremony. Maybe white man
killed and he isn't.
Maybe so. Light fire to smoke meat. Law of fire. Always must be. White man die. Boy find bones, Mr. Larson. See, here is ashes of fire.
Yes. Well, let's go over there and
make sure those are the looking for him.
Yes, Mr. Larson. But boy, he know that. Him right, Mr. Larson. This is Bones, white man. Him die 5 day past.
Let me get a good job of picking his bones, please. I must meet plenty of people in the tribe.
No, no, only few. They kill white man first, then take off all meat from bones, smoke meat, eat little, carry rest in smoke bags.
Yes, Plato, let's push on. We've got to catch up to that side one of it.
Soon catch them, Mr. Larson. 3, maybe 4 days. Go very fast.
3 days of fast travel, and we caught up with the tribe whose numbers showed more curiosity than fear. Gladly, they told us all about the murder because to them it had been a most remarkable experience, well worth telling, and with the satisfaction that a storyteller always gets from an interested audience. When the tribe first sighted Wilkins, none of them had ever seen a white man or a horse. They surrounded the composite figure of man and horse with every intention of eating both. But since they were such interesting novelties, this idea was put off indefinitely, and they were made pets of the tribe. The horse evidently was a worthless beast because it drank water in outrageous quantities and kept the tribe busy foraging for its food. In proportion to size, Wilkins was fully as bad, consuming more water than 3 warriors or 5 women of the tribe, and fussing about his food, although they gave him the most delicious morsels still wriggling. It was a general relief when the horse started to die. It was such an inefficient creature that none of its meat was eaten, lest some of its abnormal thirst and appetite be acquired by the tribe. When they learned all they could from watching the white man and his strange habits, he too was marked for death. Swiftly, a boomerang struck the back of his head, and a spear did the rest. The 2 natives who wielded the boomerang and the spear proudly boasted of their work without the slightest sense of guilt. I took them both back to the city of Fremantle, and they took it all as an exciting adventure on my promise that they would not be eaten. Well, they were not eaten, but the white man's court gave the pair a sentence of life imprisonment in spite of my plea that neither had the slightest intention of doing wrong. You see, to them, murder meant only the killing of someone within the tribe against whom there was a blood taboo. But how else is the savage nomad to learn the way the white man's law had superseded the law of the savage?
You have just heard the year's greatest detective story, a dramatization of a true life story of the same name. You will find this and many other interesting articles in next Sunday's issue of the American Weekly. Join the millions of Americans who each Sunday find the greatest enjoyment in the many fine articles and feature fiction by the world's best writers in every issue of the American Weekly, the magazine with the greatest circulation in the world, which comes to you each Sunday with your Hearst Sunday newspaper.